Welcome to Coffee First, the podcast about leaders and leadership. In each episode, we invite you to listen to a unique conversation about an individual's journey to understand what leadership is and how they've built their businesses around those learnings. We ask each guest to share those experiences and provide us with some reflections to put into practice ourselves. I'm your host, Adam Saunders, Managing Partner in the UK office and Global Board Member of AMROP, the executive search partnership shaping sustainable success through inspiring leaders. Today's guest is Dr. Hazel Harrison, a name which may be familiar to anyone who's a regular listener to our series. Hazel very kindly joined us on our first episode, which was recorded in May in the midst of lockdown, and we'd invited Hazel onto the show to discuss the importance of mental health and well-being in the workplace, which was particularly important, of course, because at that time, our homes had become offices for all of us. Since then, we've all been living the last 4 months uncertain about the future, wondering if it will ever get back to normal and if we'll ever get back to our offices. Today, as we stand, there is a strong drive by the government to get everyone back to work, and we decided that it would be a valuable follow-up to our first chat to explore how we can all prepare for the most positive and productive return to work experience. Hazel, you may remember, set up her business Think Avalana with a mission to bring psychology out of clinics and into the workplace and schools. She does this by developing and designing keynotes and workshops on a range of well-being and mental health topics, harnessing her long-held belief that prevention is better than cure. And so with that in mind, today's episode will address what effects working from home during lockdown may have had on all of us and our teams. And specifically, we'll ask Hazel what tools we might employ to ensure that every office returning to work is doing so in the best way it can for its staff's mental health and well-being. Hazel, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show to have this really important discussion.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted that I get another chance to be on the Coffee First podcast. And it's very whizzy now. You have like all your music and your, you know, everything is proper podcast now. So thank you for inviting me back. It's a real honour.
Thank you. That is the highest accolade we've received so far. That's the best bit of feedback. You're going to need to put that in the comments and rating section on whichever platform you listen to. Look, I think it would be good to kick off with a little bit about why we're doing this, because you and I have spoken, haven't we, through the intervening period between May and now, I guess, and talked a lot about what's going on in the world through the lens of well-being and mental health. And we both agreed that our first episode was interesting because we were going into lockdown, and that it would be really interesting to do a roundup episode as we head back to work, really, which kind of carries with it its own issues, concerns, worries and opportunities.
Definitely. And I think what we, you know, this has been an incredibly challenging time for many people, perhaps both physically and mentally. And I suppose for me, my kind of passion remains in wanting to think about how we can navigate this as successfully as possible and enable us to, you know, find our character strengths through some of these struggles, to be able to tap into some of our core values and to be able to look after ourselves to maintain positive mental health whilst we're all maneuvering change and uncertainty and adaptability in the ways that we're working.
Okay, well, let's get into it, because when we spoke in May, which was a live webinar, we invited lots of people to send in questions, which they did, and we dealt with a whole range of topics. I mean, in many ways, it was an introductory session on why is well-being important and why now. Health versus income was a topic. We were all learning about working from home, and we touched on, is moving jobs a good idea? I have sent out a number of emails to a number of key leaders that I know and asked them, as we head back into a return to work phase, which is, I think, where we're at, what are you worried about? Like, what is the potential concern here? And my first question is, can we really say that during lockdown we were actually working from home?
I think that's a great question, and so many different answers to that, right? Depending on what your circumstances were, where you were working from, who else you were working with. So my answer to that would be, I was doing my best at a time that was really busy to maintain my business and to carve out chunks of time in the day that I could work. But would I say I was working from home? I don't think I would, not in the way that I'm now working from home, because I've been working from home for a couple of years and it didn't look anything like what it looked like during lockdown. So many new challenges to navigate, so many other things to think about that perhaps just wouldn't usually cross my mind during my working day. But I think there'd be a range of people who would answer that question quite differently. So some people will have felt that they've had a really positive experience of working from home. Perhaps they haven't been juggling childcare or elderly relatives that perhaps they've been also looking after or whatever it might be. Some people may have felt like, no, this is me. This is what working from home looks and feels like. Perhaps they've already been doing that and it just was a sort of extension of that. But I suppose what I would challenge us all to think about is that our cognitive capacity to be really present with our work is likely to have been challenged somewhat by the fact that we are trying to work whilst experiencing something very new that none of us have ever really been through before. So even for those people who perhaps feel like, no, I've been working from home and I'm not challenging that in any way, I'm sure many people have been really, really productive. I think for some, it's important that we still acknowledge that it's likely that we may not have been on top form, because we are also juggling a lot of other things that our brain is needing to give some thought and space to, or consciously or unconsciously.
Yeah. And I think if what we're saying then is that lockdown wasn't an accurate simulation of working from home, how do we make decisions about bringing the workforce back into the office? I've certainly felt that being able to step away from my desk during the early summer term with the kids, help them with a bit of schoolwork, you know, have a coffee break with my wife, you know, distract myself with little things, aided me a lot when the kids went back to school last week and the house was empty and my wife was at work. It was a totally different experience, and it was a very different challenge to motivate myself to get going. And that was quite an eye-opener for me.
And I think that's a great example, isn't it, of what some of these changes might hold. And so the difference, if you were asked, Adam, before your children went back to school, your thoughts about working from home and how you'd found it and what you'd enjoyed and whether you wanted to carry on doing that, perhaps your answer would be quite different to if you're asked that again a month from now, having perhaps been at home 5 days a week, mainly on your own, and you know how that feels in terms of whether that's meeting the variety of needs that we might have that get met through our work.
So this brings up a point which a number of people have raised with me when they responded to my questions, which is spontaneity and water cooler moments, that ability to step away from your desk, reflect on an issue or an idea with someone, and get some feedback, and then go back to your desk refreshed and approach that idea with a new perspective. And if people are working from home, either because they live on their own or because their extended family are now not at home, are we missing out on an important part of a process as humans, an important mental well-being tool?
Well, personally, I think I've massively underestimated the importance of water cooler moments until the last few months, and seeing how people felt when they missed those. And you may remember I did some little videos about well-being, and one of them was about weak ties and this need that we have to connect with people throughout our day that aren't necessarily our really close relationships, but are just these moments of connection with someone else that actually really fuels our sense of well-being. And I think water cooler moments are part of that, but they also, as you say, maybe enable a new perspective, a new idea, a sharing of ideas, a collaboration. So I think it's going to be a challenge for us to think about how we create that. I don't think it's impossible, but I think that if people do remain working from home, then we need to think about the fact that those aspects are really important in our day, and how do we create those in a different capacity, or how do we create those using digital technologies? Can we, you know, or is that why we sometimes are going to need to go back into the office? And will they help to fuel us? And can we find some balance between those two things? Is that the perfect place where you have a little bit of time in the office and a little bit of time working from home? And I think lots of people who've been asked that question about how they want to work moving forward have tended to say they want a bit of a mix of both, because I suppose there's things that they like from being at home and there's things that they like from working in an office.
Logistically, that already brings up huge question marks though, doesn't it? Because not everybody is in sync. You know, what might be a great rhythm for you, maybe a terrible rhythm for your team member, maybe a terrible rhythm for your manager. And yep, that I think is a big, big challenge. Let me just ask you a follow-up question on that point. A number of people have said to me that they accept that perhaps clerical jobs, pure admin jobs, are a great qualification for working from home because they don't involve that necessarily that team play or client-facing activity. But I would argue that's not the case, and I'd be really interested to know if psychology agrees with that, because I don't think it has to be job specific, these water cooler moments. It could be completely unrelated. Is that right?
I suppose I would probably say the same, that I don't think it is about, you know, but that's the beauty, isn't it, of the water cooler moment, that you don't know who you're going to bump into from which part of the organization, or maybe even if your offices are shared with other organizations, someone from a different company completely. Those moments of just chance encounter in a lift, or whilst you're grabbing something to eat, where actually you do have the potential to widen your perspective by engaging with someone who does something very different to what you do. But I also think if we start to make it job specific, I wonder if we're in danger of missing the human aspect of what's going to be very important here in thinking about going back to work, which is that there may be some people doing the clerical jobs as you're describing who are very happy doing them from home, want to continue doing them from home. There may be some people who are desperate to get back, to feel a part of something, that actually the reason they like their job, and perhaps keeping the cogs, you know, turning and making sure that things get done and the organization operates in, you know, as smoothly as possible, is feeling a part of a team and being able to be there with others as a team member, which taps into their sense of meaning and purpose. So I think when we start saying this particular job title doesn't need to be in this place, I wonder if we risk missing the aspect of human nature and the diversity of us, you know, which won't necessarily fall neatly into these people will like working from home and these people will want to be in the office.
This brings into question, I think, two key elements of this, which is the commute. People's commutes vary, using public transport or not, and the home office environment, because not everybody is working from an optimal setup. And that became very apparent very early on, didn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So, and I suppose if we start with the commuting aspect, then one of the things that we obviously know, and very understandable, is a sense of anxiety that people feel as they perhaps start to commute again. We have been very much primed to think about the potential dangers of being close to others. We've been given a very strong message about the importance of us keeping our distance, and potentially then moving onto public transport, moving into crowded places, can feel really threatening. And it's not surprising that many people are feeling anxious about the possibility of commuting, or have already started and just really thoroughly not enjoying it, because of our perhaps sense of safety being threatened. So it's understandable that the commute in itself is going to present a challenge. I think it's important that leaders remember that for some people, just getting back to the office will feel like they've run a marathon. You know, the amount of kind of stress hormone needed to perhaps navigate some of that, to really get themselves geared up and ready to do that. You know, commuting can be challenging at the best of times, but certainly now. So by the time you get to the office, you might actually feel quite exhausted because you've been managing lots of these new challenges that we haven't had to navigate in the same way before. So from a perspective of commuting, I think it's important that we're all aware of the potential anxiety flare up that we might have in doing that again. And I think as leaders that we're sensitive to that and thinking about how we can make it work best for the individuals within an organisation, which may mean staggering what times people come in or allowing people to commute at quieter times if they need to, whilst we find our feet with this, because everything feels new again. You know, it's like we've not done this for a while. We've certainly not done it in the way that we're now needing to do it. And I think so that maps to the next question, which is about, well, what about your working from home scenario? You know, for some people, they may just really feel that working back in an office is the best place for them. And so, they need to get back there because they've not got something set up in a way that works for them at home. I'm really lucky that my office is separate from the house. So when I'm in this space, I know that this is my working space. And when I'm in the house, that's my kind of being a mum, being a friend, being a wife space. And I think those physical boundaries can be very beneficial to us, actually. It doesn't necessarily mean that we all have to have a building that's separate from where we sleep. But I think there are some really good rituals that we can engage in that help us to define our space so that we know where we are. Because I think sometimes what we're finding is that people have worked a lot more during lockdown, right? Because they can, the computer's just there, I'll just log back on actually after dinner and I'll just do a couple more things, and before you know where you are, you know, it's time for bed. And actually the boundaries that perhaps existed when you worked in a particular place that you were commuting to, they don't exist in the same way. So we have to create those. We have to put our things away at the end of the day, or close down the laptop and put it in a cupboard, or, you know, remove the cues from our brain that go, oh, that's a work thing, so that we can actually relax in a space that we're perhaps working and living in. And I think those little things, those little habits will become quite powerful if people continue to blend their working from home space and their living space together.
That's really interesting. So you're saying that if you're having to work out of your bedroom and you've got all of your work stuff there, it's just a great habit to put all those things away, return your space back to your bedroom space, not your workspace, and do that every day so that you don't blend the two.
I think it is, or cover them over if you can't put them away. You know, do something that defines that period is over now, and now you're shifting into your evening or your downtime. Because I think, you know, we're probably not fully conscious of the amount of cues that we actually live by. You know, our brain does like to make these shortcuts quite quickly to feel like we're being more efficient. So, you know, for example, if you find yourself in the kitchen, this might just be me. If I find myself in the kitchen, I usually look for something to eat because the kitchen is where there's food. So it must be food time, you know. But I think those things are the same for our computers and our work phones, and, you know, that actually if they're right there, then we're cued to do something with them.
On the commuting question, it's interesting because we've talked about it from the perspective of the person doing the commute. What effects might be at play for people who aren't doing the commute but are going to the office, keeping themselves relatively safe by perhaps walking or cycling, but they know that there are three or four people who are coming in who have been on a train, a tube or a bus? How does that affect them?
You know, I suppose that comes back to the mindset that you're in terms of how you as an individual have been managing living during a pandemic and the rules that you've developed as a family or as an individual, because we will have all developed certain rules about how we're going to do this, about who we will and won't see and how we will and won't engage in them. And so suddenly, perhaps if you've been able to walk everywhere, you've decided that you won't take any public transport and that's the thing that you think might keep you safe, if that's one of your rules for living, as it were, then you're right that when you go back to work, it's likely that you might feel your way of coping has been threatened by the way that other people are having to now manage and navigate their day. Whether or not that's true, obviously there's a lot of things from this virus that we still don't fully understand. So I guess we're still learning where are the big risk areas and what isn't such a big risk. But I think it's a really good point, because it actually may create some animosity, some frustration, some distancing between people. Well, the people who commute, they all hang out. And the people who walk, they don't talk to the people who've been on the train. Or, you know, you could get all sorts of things start to play out from this, can't you, about what people feel is going to keep them safe or not, that may be dividing teams, maybe actually ending up making things harder, when what we're obviously hoping, or many people are hoping, is that to get back to the office means to get back to a sense of teamness and connection.
Yeah, I think everybody has learnt over the lockdown period that forgiveness is probably the best tool to deal with the situation, to accept that just because you have a particular attitude to risk or have an attitude to socialising, that doesn't mean that everyone should abide by those. And that's probably what's going to keep everyone safe. But it's not just a commute, is it? It's everything. You know, if I come into the office today, I will take a long train journey. I'll go into one of the busiest train stations in London, walk to the office. That's one thing. But today I've got three kids who have gone to three separate classrooms filled with 20 plus children, all of whom are sharing their houses with professionals who have got their little bubbles as well at work and at home. So it becomes, you can understand why people get very, very stressed about this.
Yes. And I think what you've also identified in just telling your story is the cognitive load that we're all sort of carrying. You know, that it kind of comes back to that idea of, you know, what these are the things that we think about now that we would never have spent time thinking about before. These are the things that our brain defaults to trying to process sometimes, which is sensible. It's trying to keep us safe. But, you know, these are the things that are taking up some of our energy. And this is why perhaps it can be so tiring just trying to do anything, because we're also having to hold in mind all of these other things too.
And in turn, our productivity as well?
Yeah, I mean, when we feel that we're perhaps at a sense of increased risk, we've got a kind of heightened stress response, it's going to impact on our productivity. In some ways, we can kind of narrow our focus. So we're going to be getting really good at some things, like probably how we're navigating, you know, living through a pandemic. But we'll be less good at focusing on the things that perhaps our brain considers to be less important. But from our own interest and perspective, we might feel is really important. And I think this is why people get frustrated that they don't feel they're being as productive as they could be. They don't understand why they're not managing to maintain, you know, their productivity that they were perhaps doing before this pandemic, is because we're now dividing our resources in a different way. So, yes. And also our possibility to see different perspectives, to come up with new ideas, it diminishes when we're feeling stressed and anxious. It's a kind of clever trick that our brain hones in and wants to focus on just a few things, because that's what it thinks is going to keep us safe. But consequently, probably going to make us less creative, less able to see different perspectives, because we are in that sort of stressed zone a little bit more frequently.
That's interesting. So are there particular cognitive functions like creativity that would be it would be beneficial to have them work from home, for example?
I think, you know, it's a difficult one again, because we know that creativity can also spark from being around others and being able to share ideas and be inspired by others. So you may limit your creativity by working from home if you don't have good creative people to bounce ideas around with. But I suppose it does come back to sort of what feels manageable from a mental health perspective too, what's actually really challenging and draining to our levels of stress and anxiety that might impact on our daily functioning. That means that whatever our job might be, it just is outweighing the cost and, you know, versus benefits of whatever we might be deciding. So whether we're thinking, okay, who's going to come back to the office, who's not, you know, we're going to have to navigate that, thinking about individuals as well and what they feel they can and can't manage. Because if we are, each decision that we're making is now caught up with managing risk, then we are probably also draining some of our resource to get on and do the other things that we want to do.
Is there an argument to say that the stress could be a good thing?
Yes, there's a lot of good stuff that can come from stress. it can help us to process information more quickly sometimes. It can help us, as I said, to sort of really focus in. If we can channel it, sometimes it can really help us to give us energy. That it is a sort of brain-body response that provides us with fuel. So if we can use it in sort of short, sharp bursts, it can be great for us. But I think the challenge for many of us now is that it's a kind of drip, drip, drip of it throughout the day as we navigate some of these new risks. That might mean we don't get to kind of have a short, sharp burst and then recover. So we can all harness the sort of upside of stress and use it to our advantage, help us to perform better in a short-term way, but we also then need to have some methods for recovery from that. We need to develop our own sort of self-care strategies in order to allow us to set back to sort of baseline, if you like. If we're thinking about stress sort of increasing us, we want to be able to have moments where we can go back to a place where it's calm, where we can regulate our body and brain again. We can get our emotions sort of feeling calm, feeling relaxed. And so people use all sorts of techniques to do that. I know that you do a lot of sport, so do I, and that helps me to sort of regulate my emotions. But there can be other things too that we can sort of tap into. Perhaps it is a more sort of creative activity. Some people find, you know, drawing or writing are activities that they do to sort of regulate their stress levels. We need to know what those things are. We do need to sort of explore enough to tap into what works for us. Because if we can then start to go, okay, I've probably been feeling a little bit more stressed over the last few days and I need to bring myself back now. I'm going to do X, Y, or Z and have maybe almost a menu of things that you as an individual can choose from. Then, you know, that's great. That's sort of taking ownership over your own well-being, taking some time to look after yourself. And I think in us building our resilience, in us coming back to the office in whatever shape or form that might look like, I think investing in our own well-being has to be an essential part of that. I don't see how we can do it without that being, you know, a part of it. As you said at the start, so many people are now talking about mental health and well-being in ways that they haven't done before this experience.
So I understand, Hazel, are you advocating an hour's art break in the middle of the working day in the corner of the office?
And I think that, you know, there's an interesting aspect to that too. It doesn't always have to be really long. You know, it could be a 10-minute downtime, a 10-minute set your phone, you know, on a timer and just allow yourself to do something that helps you for a few minutes. And I think related to that, one of the things that I am worried about now is the uncertainty that appears it will continue. So we don't know now what the next month or 2 months or 3 months are going to look like. We're bombarded, you know, my phone will at some point in the morning send me the 5 things I need to know about the coronavirus notification. And, you know, sometimes I probably need to know those things, sometimes I don't. All of these uncertainties that will keep changing and evolving, and how we are going to continue to adapt to that. Because we are creatures of habit. We do like to know what's going to happen. We do like to make plans about things occasionally. We like to know where we're going to go for our summer holiday, or maybe who we'll be spending time with in the holidays, or whatever it might be. We do like to plan and look forward to these things. And some of those things will be an important and integral part of bringing us back to base, of allowing us to kind of have those recovery periods. And so what happens when we can't plan for those anymore? What does it start to look like then when we can't actually make a plan about where we might go or who we're going to be with or what are the things that we might usually look forward to? I think it's forcing us to be much more mindful in the present moment because we cannot make any plans longer term. Or we can, but they might be scuppered by new rules or guidance.
Yeah, I don't know where you stand in the Christmas is the best time of year camp, whether you're a, you're a believer or not. I know Fabi, who I can see here is our editor, is shaking her head. I don't think she's in the camp. I'm firmly in the camp, and I've already people have started murmuring, you know, what if Christmas, we can't get together for Christmas? You know, what if we can't fly home? What if we can't do this? And that definitely has, it, it has a toll, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's gonna take a toll, because people will be like, well, this is what we've always done, and how do we not see these people that we always see, or this time that we always really nurture and appreciate? You know, it's going to present some new challenges for us again.
Which is a great segue to my next question. We're all talking about getting back to normal, but this is not going to be the same normal, is it? So how do we deal with that? As people, we want to know that things are going to return to how we like them, but that doesn't really seem to be the case. You know, even if every single person went back to the office tomorrow, we would all be sanitizing. We would be wearing masks. We would be not within a couple of meters of each other. And that's a fundamentally different experience. Just going back to the office isn't a return to normal, is it?
It certainly isn't. And I think, you know, I've had several friends say to me over the last few days, as I've kind of bumped into them, oh, I'm so over this now. I'm just so over this. It's like, it's really hard to be over this, because this is not over. You know, so whilst many people are experiencing that perhaps fatigue of how we have to do things in a different way now, and this newness that we all want to push against, it is not the normal that we know and love. And there are these barriers, I think, that tap back into what it means to be human, you know, to cover your mouth and face when you speak to someone, so that you limit the amount of understanding of their emotional experience, to not be able to touch someone. But these things that really challenge how we, you know, how we do spend time with each other, and back in the office too. I know some friends who've said that they couldn't wait to get back. And then when they have got back into the office, it's not felt the same. And the disappointment and the frustration and the, you know, the longing that they thought going back to the office might mean that it was going to be back to normal. And it's not normal. And this doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon. So how do we adapt to that? I think part of it is about us. And it's hard to say this, because I myself don't want to do this either, but an acceptance that we cannot have that normal right now, although I know that we'll want to push against it, and I hope that innovation means that we will continue to try and find a way to get back to the places that we want to get back to, or to get forward to new places that feel even better. But we will have to find a solution that feels good enough for now, and that doesn't sit very comfortably with lots of us, because we don't want good enough, we want the best. You know, we don't want to hang out with good enough. But probably that is where we are right now, is just kind of going, okay, well, these are the things we can't have and can't do, but these are also the things that we can still have. And these are still these opportunities for socializing with others, even if we have to be outside, or even if, you know, we have to stand 2 meters away, is still better than not seeing these people at all. So I think it is about us having to adjust our mindsets a little bit too. And I don't think it necessarily means that we have to accept that this is how it's all going to be forever. But that anxiety and fatigue that I think is kicking in, with people just being like, I'm so over this, I think one way to combat that is with a bit of acceptance and a willingness to see that this is how it's going to be for a little bit.
Yeah, and a growth mindset, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is a challenge. This is a, you know, maybe it wasn't the best. Maybe this is a great opportunity for us to bring in some practices into the business environment to improve productivity, to increase engagement and well-being by, you know, maybe allowing people to have 10 minutes to go and draw, maybe allow them to disappear around the corner and, you know, chat to a friend, not in the allotted slots that previously were deemed acceptable.
Yes. And I think that brings me on to another area, I suppose, I'm really curious about, which is, I think when we were in the heart of lockdown, there was this real sort of energy and conversation starting about what would be different when we go back, that maybe this is an opportunity, that maybe this is a really exciting chance for us to do things differently, to get rid of the things that weren't working, for us to be able to define how we work and learn in new ways, and embrace some of the things that really worked about this new way of being, and bring them with us, you know, so that perhaps people who have done more things that are creative were able to continue doing that, or those that have discovered a new love of a hobby, or are able to continue doing that, but also perhaps those people who've realized they weren't seeing their family because their commute was so long, and suddenly they've got a chance to be a part of that and realize some of the things that they want to spend more time doing. You know, all sorts of challenges that we've had to reflect on or wanted to reflect on during this time. My worry is that as there's this big sort of push to get back, we've got to get back, you know, that will we hold on to those things? Will we remember what those things are? Will we even allow ourselves a chance to reflect and think about how we're going to do things differently now? Because I think it is a great opportunity. Like you said, it's, you know, a great sort of growth mindset challenge that means that we reflect, we seek feedback, we try again, we try something new, we see what happens next. How do we make sure that we don't lose that? Because I feel like, well, if we lose that, then have we lost some of the most positive things from this whole experience that we could really learn a lot from?
It's interesting. I feel quite positive about that, actually. One of the questions I asked before we did this was to ask every business owner, do you feel that firms with traditional values towards working from home will be at a disadvantage to those who are more accepting of a change? And every single person said yes, traditional views will be disadvantaging their workforce and themselves and their businesses. And I think as well, you know, what this opportunity has created is we're not reinventing the wheel, because some of the most successful businesses for the last 40 or 50 years have known that if they allow their teams, their employees to work according to their rhythms within an agreed bandwidth, that they will get better results. And you only have to look, you know, into the American tech businesses to see that this happens already. It's about putting these working practices into more traditional businesses and more broadly across the globe. I think that's what's happening. So I'm quite positive, actually.
Optimistic about that.
Yeah, optimistic is the word that I couldn't find. Thank you. So it's been around for a long time. Anyway,
It's not new.
But it's not universal. That's, I think, the point, isn't it? And I was really pleased to see that everyone said, you know, if we don't allow our employees to be flexible with their time now, we're just going to be at a huge disadvantage. And there's no sector that isn't applicable to, because it's so subjective.
Yeah, which is exciting, because then it feels like, okay, so then there's some really interesting changes that could evolve in other sectors that perhaps haven't been doing this before, that might make them more appealing in the future, but also that might enable people to really thrive because they are carving out a day that works for them and their rhythm and their family and their own needs, and that autonomy of taking ownership over the bit that you're doing.
Hazel, we're getting towards the end of our time, so I think it's important to try and summarize really what we've been discussing here and provide someone who's listening, I guess, a quick two or three habits or summary on what people can do who are thinking about bringing their teams back into the office, or who are indeed thinking about going back into the office themselves, and how they might improve their chances of that being successful.
Okay, so I think for those who are in positions of leadership, and we've talked about mindset today, so it feels important that we maybe expand on that a little bit. I think, you know, the mindset approach is going to be really important. Whilst I know that leaders want to perhaps sometimes give off that sort of vibe that we're in control and we know what's going on and we know how to do this, there is a reality to this situation, which is that there's so much uncertainty, we can't possibly know how to do all of this. So I think for leaders, it's going to be important to hold on to that aspect of a growth mindset and understanding that we can't know everything. So we're opening up this possibility of perhaps welcoming people back to work, back to a shared space, but we don't know exactly how that's going to go and what's going to work and what's not going to work. So I think firstly, we need to be open-minded to get the feedback about what's working and not working. feedback is going to be a fundamental part of understanding how we can improve this process for employees, how we can make sure that it works the best for them. And so, you know, being curious, having conversations, finding out what it's like for people that are coming back, what they're enjoying, what they're not enjoying. I think those sorts of things are going to be really, really important and fundamental to this process actually going as well as it can. And that means that, of course, we want to give off this sense that we are leading, but also that we don't know everything. We're going to need everyone to feed into that so that we can build and grow and learn from that experience. And I suppose coupled with that then is also this aspect of understanding, as we've touched on today, the individual nature of what people are going to be managing. It would be great if we could just sort of say everyone's going to be experiencing this and they'll all experience it this way, and so we'll just implement, you know, this strategy. But in reality, we know, we've already discussed the massive diversity in what people have experienced and what they're going to experience as they start to come back to a physical office space. So understanding that, getting to know what that means for those individuals, making sure that there's a sense that people are being heard and being listened to, so that some of those potential challenging aspects that might arise from the diversity can be used to bring people together rather than separating them.
That's fantastic. Hazel, if people wanted to get in touch with you to help them address their return to work strategy to ensure that they're getting the best out of their individual situation, how can they get hold of you?
They can contact me via my website, which is www.thinkavalana.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. And I'd love to hear from people. I'd love people to also just share their experiences of what's working. I think it's really important, you know, if we take this growth mindset theory to a bigger place, then how do we make sure that we connect up what's working so that other people can learn from that too? So I'd also love to hear from those that feel like they've got strategies that are working really well, so that perhaps we can learn something from that and share it with others too.
Fantastic. Okay. And I'd encourage anyone who's really seriously thinking very hard about getting the best from their team, ensuring that their productivity is high and that they're positioning the well-being of their teams first, to get in touch with Hazel and spend some time chatting to her. Hazel, one of the things that we didn't do on the first episode was some questions. We started asking people questions because we thought it'd be really interesting to just get to know the person a little bit better. So I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions, and it's just simple binary answers, and I'm gonna ask you a couple more questions. Okay. I know the answer to this one because you already addressed it in the first episode. Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Green tea. Yeah. Okay. Book or Audible?
Book.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Everyone says dogs. We've not yet got a cat person.
I do like a cat, but you know, dogs, well, yeah. They bring stuff back and you throw it again for them and then they bring it back. It's awesome.
Yes. Instagram or Twitter?
I love Instagram, but I'm probably more of a Twitter person because I don't always have the pictures. You've got to have pictures on Instagram, haven't you? And I'm a word, so yeah.
What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Thinkavalana.
Okay. Apple or Android?
Apple all the way.
Are you a morning or an evening person?
I am definitely a morning person. By about the time the kids gone to bed, I'm pretty much ready to go to bed myself.
All right. Gig, concert or theatre?
Gig. Bring the gigs back, please.
Okay, awesome. One of the questions that I love to ask people is, what is your favourite book and why?
Okay, so there have been a lot of books that I've read that I think have changed my life or changed the way that I see things. And one of the most powerful has definitely been Carol Dweck's book, Mindset, because I think it helped me understand that I had the potential to keep learning, to fail at things and to adapt and to collaborate with other people and to see others who knew how to do things as a source of wisdom rather than to perhaps feel threatened by that. So I think it's really helped change a lot about how I learn and how I live my life. So from that perspective, And because we've been talking a lot about mindset today, I'd say Carol's book.
Great choice. You introduced me to that book, and I have to say I love it.
Ah, thank you. It's a good book.
Hazel, that is the end of our chat. And it's, I think, really all that's left to say is for me to thank you again for your time and your wisdom. Your perspective at this particular time, I think, is hugely helpful to anyone that really cares about the well-being of themselves, their family, friends, and of course their businesses. And I really can't say thank you enough for you taking the time to share your thoughts with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me back on. I feel very honored.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Coffee First. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe button, follow our Twitter account, CoffeeFirst13, and follow the Amrop UK LinkedIn page for all company updates. We look forward to inviting you back for the next episode of Coffee First.